Mickey, you're here in London again, and how are you liking this weather?
It's beautiful. It's the best weather I've ever seen in London. It really is. I don't know if you guys feel that way, but I mean, at home right now, it's like 100 degrees almost every day in Virginia. I don't know what that translates
to. That's about what it is here today. And
no, not even close.
It is about 100. It's going to get to about 33 Celsius, so that's getting into the mid to high 90s.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you this country's not really built for that.
No?
No.
I know, I'm hearing a lot of, God, it's so hot.
Well, like all British people, we're talking about the weather. we're going to talk about a bit about TNA. We're going to talk a bit about music, because this is kind of... it's not really a unique thing, I suppose, in wrestling that there's crossovers with music, but you are here in the UK, and as much as you're promoting, I guess, TNA, Impact Wrestling and stuff like that, you're also promoting your second album.
Right.
Tell us about the process that goes from being someone who, you know, wrestles for a living, but then suddenly is becoming a recording artist.
Well... Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've been really fortunate to have, you know, make some really incredible connections, and I have my management team, and I have now the label behind me, E1 Music Nashville, who's really working hard and promoting me as an artist in that aspect, and to find in that, you know, that separation, but yet blend of the two. But it's you know, it's two different things. It's two different animals. You know, it's run off of two different types of emotions, and although they run very parallel as far as the lifestyles and the fans and the loyalty and the all that, they still, I feel, because when I'm on stage, feel so vulnerable. Whereas in the ring, I don't feel vulnerable. I feel invincible, if that makes any sense.
Is that because the music is a newer thing where you kind of, maybe not starting right at the bottom, but it's almost like being the opening match?
Well, it is kind of, and the thing is that the beauty is that what I've learned and taking from making it in the wrestling business, I'm using, because I am pretty much starting all over in the music world. You know, if I want to do this right, I have to do it the right way. Like, I'm going to the radio stations and talking to the program directors and, you know, getting to know them on a personal basis, just as I would go to indie shows and, you know, work for a handshake and, you know, hopefully have a great match and enough gas money to get home. So doing that, like, it's like, I appreciate and I respect that grassroots approach, and I feel like it's a necessity if I want to do this and if I want to do it right. So that's kind of cool, because I feel like, you know, when you reach a certain point in one career, like as I've done and been fortunate enough to do in wrestling, but yet there's still so much I want to do. But to then have to go and then start pretty much all over again and another thing is kind of cool. Because, and at least I've learned enough in the other one to know kind of... Yeah. I'd help myself along. And saying that, like, you know, obviously I've met a lot of people, and wrestling has aided me in the sense of the notoriety and the name that I've built for myself in this business that has helped me in the music side. But it's also that catch-22 is, because as much as it's helped me, it's also kind of not hindered me, but, you know, caused a little bit more of that, you know, question, if you will. But I think I'm overcoming that
perhaps some might feel that maybe you are in the position you're in the music because of your name as a wrestler, perhaps.
Right. Well, and I think that if I had sold a million records or something, then one might think that, because I haven't. And it's, you know, it's that I'm working really hard. I think that it is just kind of, well, this is something that she loves equally to wrestling, and it's two different things, it's two different animals kind of deal. So yeah, and the fact that, you know, Dixie's really behind it, and the company's really behind it, and I have the time, you know, to be able to pursue it and to actually work on it and give a little bit more dedication to it is cool.
So Dixie Carter, you mentioned there, president, I guess, of TNA, has links to country music through her husband, I think, and also because the company is based in Nashville in Tennessee, which, if you know, people listening in our country perhaps don't know much about the country music scene, that's pretty much the epicenter of it for the world.
It really is. And well, not just country music, for all kinds of genres. Like, there's some of the best musicians in the world live in Nashville. And so Dixie, contrary, like a lot of people don't know this, was in the music business for like 20 years. I mean, she worked with Tanya Tucker. And so that's what she did before... being, so she totally understands what I'm trying to do and how, you know, how to do it. And so she, you know, we've been able to work with her on that aspect, you know, with my management team and with the label, so to all kind of come together and make this thing work, hopefully, as best as possible, where it benefits both sides, you know, both sides of my career as well as, you know, the parties, I guess.
Now, am I doing you a disservice in sort of describing what you are doing with the music as country music? And I don't mean that as a derogatory term. What I mean is that in this country here in Britain, country is perhaps a very niche genre in terms of, I wouldn't say there aren't fans of country because I'm sure I'll get lots of people shouting at me for that, but it's certainly not very visible, if you like, in comparison with other musical genres.
Well, I think it's more, this is what we've said, and because I have a little bit of everything on this, like there's a little bit of soul. I mean, I grew up with Percy Sledge and Al Green with my dad, so there's, you know, some very soulful songs, like, and but it's more like Southern rock. We're bringing back Southern rock, which I feel like in some aspects a lot of the country nowadays is Southern rock. You know, it's just got the country because Southern rock is not a genre anymore, but we're going to bring it back. So it's country. It's not traditional country. It's not, you know, it's not that same type of traditional country. This one's a little bit different. It's a little bit rocked up. It's a little bit in your face. And there's even like this one song on there, I'm Gone song, that's not country at all. It's total rock and roll. So it just depends on what your flavor is. And I really feel like, you know, with this album that we were able to have the country aspect and do that and then rock it up a little bit, have the Southern rock, have a little bit of soul, and have a little bit of rock and roll, you know, but where it's still at the end of the day, it's still all me and it all makes sense in my, what I'm trying to do.
So we're seeing on Impact Wrestling a kind of mix of Mickey James the wrestler and Mickey James the singer. The Mickey James that we see on Impact Wrestling has a very high opinion of herself and her standing in both professions, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Which is funny because if you know me, I'm so full of myself. No, it's really cool to be able to do something new and exciting and to sink your teeth into something that's so different and to really embrace it. And you know, I'm sure that some people really think, like, this hussy right here, I can't wait till somebody punches her in the mouth, which is great because that means that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And it was that weird thing because I'm also, like, in the middle of, I just released an album in May. And I genuinely want people to go and listen to the music and buy it and hopefully like it and share it with their friends and come into the concerts, obviously. But the wrestling business is very different because whether they love me or hate me, they're going to come see me because I'm going to entertain them. And they want to see me either beat somebody up or they want to see me get beat up. But either way, I'm doing my job, depending on, you know. So to find that balance of, like, not turning people away from the music, but to still be able to go out there and portray this insanely, condescending kind of, I think I'm being very genuine out there. I don't really know what you're talking about. It's just kind of, no, it's great. It's so much fun. I've been the same character for 8 years, the same. And the thing is that character, it was very easy to be because it was very close to home. It was who I was.
Because one of the things is that, you know, unlike a lot of wrestlers that we see in any company around the world, I mean, Mickey James is Mickey James.
Right.
You are performing under your
real name.
You're not going under, you know, the big boss woman or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
So that, does that help in terms, because a lot of people, a lot of historians will say that the best wrestling characters are just themselves, just turned up a bit.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at Stone Cold, I mean, Stone Cold's been known to say that. Like, you know, obviously, you know, I feel like, because everybody knew a character like that, like Stone Cold, like they had a crazy uncle, or at least at my family we did, you know, like, that would get drunk and, you know, whatever, tell people where to go and what to do, and that I feel like that's always been a true thing. Like, all the best characters, all the ones that have, you know, gone on in our hearts to become, I feel like they were an extension of themselves, but with the volume turned all the way up in larger than life kind of deal. So, and I was fortunate enough to be able to keep my own name and be Mickey James.
I guess
it's such a cool name too. Thanks, Mom.
I guess because this name comes from your WWE stint, and I guess perhaps were they going through a kind of a phase at that time where they were like, right, everyone's going to have their real names, because I guess John Cena is a similar thing, is it not? He was a guy who came through at a certain time. They seem to have this thing going on. We'll just give everyone their real
names. Well, no, nobody had their real names when I came through. I mean, except for, you know, John and Randy Orton, obviously. I think people that had either some type of history or whatever. I was very fortunate in to keep my name because the name that I had before, when they were getting ready to debut me, Vince hated. And because it didn't sound like a real name. It sounded, you know, it just
this would have been Alexis Lurie.
Alexis Lurie, yeah. Which, Lurie is my middle name. For most, you know, most people know that that's my middle name. But like, it just didn't sound like he's just like, oh, I don't like it. And so they asked me what I wanted to be because I'm getting ready to debut on TV and nobody really thought of, oh, what's her name going to be? And I said, oh, well, I mean, can I be Mickey James? I don't know if they knew at that time that that was my real name. I mean, you know, I hope they do. They were signing my check. So, but it's just one of those things. And he goes, Vincent, I love it. It's great. And it is a unique name, you know, and if you think about it, like it is a cool kind of catchy name, you know? So
because one of the I don't know if it's a unique thing to the wrestling industry or whatever, is that if you go under your real name, you effectively own the rights
to your name.
So somebody like I'm trying to think of an example.
You can't. I mean, you can try. Like the thing is if you were to sign away rights to your real name, well, that's just stupid. I mean, it's on your birth certificate. Your parents gave you that name. That is your given name. So obviously, a company can take that name and have the rights to use it for an X amount of time, but they cannot own your real name because that is your name. That's you have a number that goes with that. It's on your. It's impossible to own something that you were given.
Which means then, I guess, if you're moving between promotions, moving between companies, you can go as that person. Whereas I really can't think of an example off the top of my head. Say something like The Undertaker, for instance. If The Undertaker went to TNA. For instance.
Right.
Strictly and theoretically, he couldn't be that named character.
No, you have
TNA.
To, because they've created, that's a character name and that's something that they've created and built. If it's not your given name, then you can't obviously take it with you. Like, they'll own that forever.
And so all of that helps when it comes to being, you know, a singing star and stuff like that, because, you know, you don't have to suddenly be singing star Mickey James, known also as Alexis Lurie.
Right, yeah, where it goes, oh, also known as, formerly known as, Prince.
Now, whatever the name, I would go as far as to say this is the best version of Mickey James that we've seen.
Do you like it?
I mean,
it's fun.
We go back, certainly one of the storylines that you were certainly very well known for was the time with Trish Stratus and WWE and stuff like that. And while that was a very, very entertaining and very kind of, it's kind of quite a deep storyline in terms of there was a lot to that story.
It was, and we had 6 months to develop that and I couldn't have asked for a better person to do that with. You know, I was coming in, I was brand new, fresh face, so excited to be there. And so a lot of that excitement was genuine in the sense of I was that excited. I mean, I'd been working for years to get to that point. And so, it was amazing. But what I've learned is that to take some of the stuff that I learned when I was playing that crazy kind of over-the-top character, but now to, because this character now is completely different. And this aspect of like, where I was just super excited and everything was about Trish, 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 how wonderful she is. And she's the greatest thing alive and yada, yada, yada. Now it's, I'm the greatest thing. You know what I mean? But, and I'm not all this way. I'm just kind of, I don't know. I'm having fun with, and I'm still learning it because it's like, we've just started to really develop it. And I think as this character gets deeper and kind of, we'll find some more fun stuff coming out of the woodwork. I don't know. It's just, it's fun.
I said beforehand I wasn't going to ask you anything about the royal baby, but I am going to ask you about the royal baby. we as Britons seem to have gone a bit potty for the fact that a baby is about to be born.
And it's not their own.
It's not their own?
Baby.
Well, it's not, you know, yeah.
Well, it's Britain's baby.
It's Britain's baby,
be.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
I thought you were doubting the parentage.
No,
there.
No.
I'm saying
it's not your baby, it's not my baby.
No,
I'm not
no,
going to be the one nursing
so,
the baby.
So how do you as an American sort of view this whole shebang? Because I can't really recall in America perhaps a baby saga where the whole nation has been gripped by somebody, you know, being
having born. A baby. I mean, unless we're talking about like I mean, even Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, I mean, people were talking about that when they had Baby North, but it wasn't in this capacity, obviously. I mean, well, I think it's pretty wonderful, honestly. I mean, because it's the royal family, it's the royal bloodline. You know, obviously it's a wonderful thing because it's just, I don't know. But I did talk to her, and I mean, I know I kind of joked around about it, but I really think that they're going to go with the name Mickey. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a great name. I think it would work.
It could be Michael if it's a boy, I suppose.
Mickey is unisex. It's a unisex name.
So we're talking about great things happening in Britain. Finally, we'll talk about TNA coming back to Britain.
How exciting.
January, February sort of time. I mean, these are generally the biggest shows of the year terms of the crowds and stuff like that. How do you like being here, at Wembley Arena, at Manchester MEA?
Well, I've always loved coming over here and touring. Like, the fans are so gracious and happy and excited to be, you know, for us to be visiting. And that's the difference, is I think that in the States, we're there all the time. We're there throughout the year. But we only come over here once a year. So it's a very special moment. And now that we're shooting live TV over here, I think it's just incredible. Because then you can see the energy on the screen and see, like, how into it and how excited they truly are. It's amazing. Because, you know, you feel it when you're out there in the arena or whatever. But to be able to capture it and to visualize it is completely different. So, yeah, I'm excited. It's always a treat. Plus, I get a scone and
scone.
Clotted cream.
Scone.
Scone.